This episode is brought to you in part by Regent College, Vancouver, Canada. Experience God's call to a life more abundant with our 1 to 2 week summer courses. Sign up today at rgnt.net/summer.
You're listening to episode 92.
This one's because of you.
Of the In-Between podcast, where you'll discover ideas to build a strong, connected, and joy-filled marriage and family. My name is Daniel Im.
And I'm Christina Im.
This episode is for me.
Yeah, and for me too. Actually, this podcast episode is because of you. We polled our audience on social media. If you're not following us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, we are at In-Between Show. That's I-M, In-Between Show. And we asked y'all, what are some things that you feel like isn't talked about enough? And a resounding number of y'all said, you know what? As a parent of a special needs child, I really don't feel like there's anything out there to encourage us. There's a lot of do's and don'ts, and there's a lot of things that make us almost feel guilty that we're not doing enough, or maybe we're doing too much, or we're you know, helicoptering our kids. And so y'all really wanted something to specifically address what you're going through.
So we have an incredible interview for you. We interviewed Jamie Sumner, who has written for the New York Times and the Washington Post, among many other publications. She is the author of the nonfiction book on motherhood, Unbound, the middle grade novel, Roll With It, and recently came out with a brand new book called Eat, Sleep, and Save the World. She's a mom to a son with cerebral palsy, and she writes and speaks about disability in literature. So this is going to be incredibly encouraging if you are a parent of a special needs child.
And even if you do not have a special needs child yourself, perhaps you know a special needs family or somebody in your child's classroom. And above all else, she really addresses every parent. And this episode will really encourage anyone who listens.
All right. Well, let's listen in.
Jamie, we are so excited to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us from cold Nashville today.
And warm Edmonton from us.
Yeah. I actually did check the weather at this point. Edmonton, Canada, which is usually the coldest place on the earth, is warmer than Nashville. So a warm welcome to you, I guess.
I was not going to tell listeners what the degree was, the temperature that I told you, because I was going to get embarrassed when I said it was cold.
It's okay. Most of our listeners already know that the schools shut down when there's even a threat of snow in Nashville versus the schools actually never shut down in Edmonton.
Never.
Like, that is in their policy. No matter
like,
how
there
cold.
There is no such thing as a snow day there. Like,
no, there isn't.
No.
Well, then snow would be shut down for 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. The school. That's true. No. The kids actually asked their principal. They're like, we heard there's going to be like 10 inches of snow tomorrow. Is anything going to happen? And the principal was like, no, wear your snow pants. They're like, okay.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So. And bread, milk, and eggs never get sold out when it snows.
That's
up here.
True. So. Yeah. I mean, we lived in Nashville for 5 years. I still don't understand that. So, yeah. But you were born in Nashville. So can you explain to us why they have the bread, milk, and eggs? Like, what is that about?
The answer is I cannot explain it. And you know what's funny? You were just saying that. And I was thinking, now that we have Amazon Prime and same day delivery, do you think that even happens? Do you think people are just like, I'm going to add it to my cart?
Interesting.
Let the Amazon drivers be brave in the snow.
Oh, that's true.
I have no idea. That'd be really interesting.
See,
to
I just thought that there's this Southern obsession with French toast. That's all.
Stop it.
Right.
You know what's funny about that? I did make my kids French toast this weekend because it was extra cold. So maybe it's a thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Somewhere down the line, marketing was like, you know, if we could just sell them the staples.
Oh, it's crazy how, deceptive it can be. Anyway, that's not the topic of this podcast.
We're not talking about conspiracy theories.
And snow and general fear exactly. of the weather.
Yeah.
Another time, Jamie. Another
that's,
time.
That's the title of your next book.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Not right there.
Right. Yeah. But you did, Jamie, you did write the most amazing book called Eat, Sleep, Save the World. What did that mean? Like, I read the title and I saw the picture for those who haven't seen the picture
yet. I love
of
the
it.
Cover.
It's a cereal bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah. With a little smiley face in it. So what inspired you to write this book?
Well, first of all, it's so funny. The title, I guess it's my personality in a title, because it's like, when you're parenting any kid, not just a special needs kid, everything feels necessary and vital. And then also things feel so silly at the same time.
Right.
Like, it's you find yourself being ridiculous. Like, I've re-sung the words to Elmo songs. You know, we've revamped every lyric to blippy theme music. I mean, so the title is partly like, you know, you got to eat, you got to sleep. Oh, yeah. And save the world, because it feels like that. It feels like you're getting in all these necessary, vital things and imparting vast amounts of wisdom, or so you hope, to your children. But then also, like, we're just getting through the day, and like, don't stick your finger in your nose. And right. Oh, yeah. Then don't wipe it there. You know, it's just all of that combined. But the story itself, or the impetus for the book itself, was, of course, I'm a mom to my son Charlie, who is about to turn 8, was born at 30 weeks, very early, very scary birth. And he has a rare syndrome called Beckwith-Wiedemann syndrome, which led to a lot of things, led to a tracheotomy and a G-tube and a really intense first couple of years and a later diagnosis of cerebral palsy. And so as a parent to a kid with special needs, when I was those first years, like when it was really, really hard in a scary way and very intense, I wanted books that would help me, you know, that would make me feel comforted and make me feel not so scared and alone. And there just wasn't anything, especially faith-based, but also just the general parenting section. It's like they all felt like how-to books.
Right.
And first of all, nobody could tell me exactly how to parent Charlie, because there was so much going on. And that's true of any kid, that no book can tell you exactly how to parent them.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, that's not what I wanted. Like, I didn't want an instruction manual for him. I just wanted some comfort and some encouragement. And there wasn't really anything. And so when Charlie got a little bit older and I had a little bit more perspective and hindsight and distance from those early years, I just really wanted to create that book I didn't have.
That's so good. I love the heart and the vision behind that, because I know how you know how much blood, sweat, and tears goes into writing.
Right,
and
exactly.
The process of all, and yes. I mean, it's just like I remember talking to this one individual. Oh, actually, it was reflecting on Gary Chapman, Five Love Languages, and I mean, the guy still is traveling, speaking about the book. And this friend was like, okay, but you know, when you write, you need to be okay with speaking about this for at least the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Are you that passionate about this subject? And I can hear that coming through your words, Jamie.
Right. And I have worked with special needs families for quite a long time. And the same thing, it was just like, they'd continue to ask me, like, what is out there that is not going to send me down a rabbit hole of I need to continue to research what this means for, you know, my son or my daughter as they get older, and what kind of supports and will they need, and will they be able to be married, and like all of that. They're like, we just need the here and now, like what is here to be able to encourage us just to take the next step, and just to even tell us that we're okay. That we're okay to be scared. We're okay to have questions. It's okay to not know what to do, but also to point us to hope. And Jamie, I think that your book has done that just so wonderfully and beautifully, that you point us to the hope of Christ, and also that you weave in biblical stories, which we'll talk about a little bit more later. But I just thought it was so amazing to see the Bible through the lens of you as a special needs parent. So this is just an amazing amazing resource, thank everyone. You. I know we're going to attach the book to our show notes so you can take a look at it. And if you know somebody who has a special needs child or even yourself, this is something that you're just going to want on your nightstand, on your coffee table, just to be able to, you know, when you're having a hard time, you just need to, maybe you need to take a little breather. Mm-hmm. Maybe take that one into the closet, into the bathroom, and with maybe like even a chocolate or something like that, and be like, I'm just going to read a little bit.
It's like turn off the social notifications on your phone and just kind of creep away somewhere.
right. Yeah. That's perfect.
That's good. Now, Jamie, you mentioned that your son now, Charlie, he's 8. So we're curious, what was your daily life like when he was younger as opposed to now?
Oh my goodness. It is night and day. If you had asked me to predict, and again, this is why looking into the future, like, and trying to guess never works, because I would have been so wrong. So Charlie, so he was born at 30 weeks and he did not come home from the NICU for almost 12 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a long time.
I lived in the NICU. And that was because part of the syndrome, the Beckwith-Wiedemann syndrome, is that he was born with an enlarged tongue, and we just could not get him to breathe. We couldn't get him to breathe safely. You know, he would start to kind of learn to breathe around his tongue, and then he would have a growth spurt in the NICU, and then he couldn't breathe anymore. And it was so scary because we did not know what to do. And finally, at around 10 weeks in the NICU, our beloved ENT, who we fell in love with, recommended getting a trach. And of course, that's terrifying too, because I'm voluntarily putting a hole in my son's throat and hoping that this will solve the problem. And I still remember sitting in his hospital room in the little nursing chair, because I would come in there and nurse and pump, and practicing on this rubber doll, inserting and removing this trach. And I'm like,
wow,
I could barely do it on the doll. My hands were shaking because just the thought of doing it on Charlie. And so ultimately, through a lot of prayer and terror, we trusted him, and we felt like if we want to bring our son home, this is what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, and it was the right decision. He could breathe through the trach, and I quickly became an expert at operating it. He came home with the trach and then later a G-tube so he could eat.
Okay.
A little tube in his belly. But I mean, I would carry, I still have this. So it's a backpack that has a pump in it and a hose that snakes out from the top, and you flip a switch on it, just like a lawnmower, and it turns on and it suctions like a vacuum. And I would have to suction the phlegm and gunk and all this gross stuff. Sorry, listeners, if you're eating breakfast, out of the trach. Because he can't cough it up, because you can't cough anything up past the trach.
Yeah.
So it would be like 3, 4, 8, 15 times an hour that I would have to do this with him. But it sounded like a lawnmower and it looked ridiculous. And so everywhere we went, we were loud, and it was very obvious. I mean, it was very obvious that we were not leading the normal life. And so we had all of that. And then he slept with an oxygen and heart rate monitor on his foot, so it would alarm at certain levels. And he also was prone to seizures in those first 2 years of life when he got a fever. Now, again, we didn't know it was just when he got a fever. And so we had a neurologist, and we started it on medicine after several emergency room visits where they couldn't figure out why he was having these. Those first few years were terrifying. I mean, I was living not just day to day, but like second to second, because I never, is this monitor going to beep? Is his feeding pump going to stop working? Mm-hmm. Is the suction machine one time stopped working, which was truly terrifying, because if I can't clear his throat, what do I do?
Yeah.
And so it was like kind of like living on the verge of panic. Which is not a healthy place to be, emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally. All of it was hard. And because we didn't know if he would grow out of any of that. But luckily, as he got older, he had tongue reduction surgery at 7 months old. And that finally allowed him to breathe safely through his mouth. And again, that was another giant leap of trust. Like, is this actually going to work?
Right.
Or are we just putting him through a surgery that's not going to work? Luckily, it did. And he was able to eat better and got the trach out and he got the G tube out. And so he was back to all the normal body parts and holes that you're supposed to have instead of all these extra things.
Extras, yeah. And
we, you know, and so we started to normalize a little bit, but then in other ways, not, because he was diagnosed with cerebral palsy at age one. He got his first wheelchair around four. And we thought when he got the trach out that he would learn to speak at like delayed, but still be able to do that. But we found out that part of the CP is that he's also mostly nonverbal. That was one of those mysteries that we found out later. And so he's now learning to use a speaking device, which if you've ever seen the show Speechless, it's kind of like that. It looks like an iPad, but it's actually a touch screen. This is exciting. So you're asking me about life now. This week, his speech therapist at school messaged me and said they're ready to go up on his vocabulary because he knows everything.
Oh,
and he's wanting to answer things.
That's incredible.
Oh, Charlie.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So that's phenomenal.
You know, milestones happen in their own fashion. And it's actually kind of amazing because I get to be excited and surprised about it when they do. But so to answer the question as to life now, it's a lot less scary. I feel a lot more confident as a parent. It's physically harder because he's now over 50 pounds and, you know, he can't walk. So I lifting him in and out of the van or his wheelchair or the bathtub. Like we turned our dining room actually into his bedroom last year because he was, it was too scary to try to carry him up the stairs. So there's different challenges now, but I'm not scared, which I can handle anything if I'm not so fearful.
That's right. Yeah. Very, very true. So, because we're a marriage and family podcast, I'm wondering, Jamie, as you're looking through now versus, like, let's say even in the NICU, how did you and your husband continue to be able to stay connected, especially when you're just kind of living in fear or even just traveling back and forth to the hospital? I mean, our son was in the hospital for 3 days, which is nothing compared to weeks on weeks in the hospital. So even that is super tiring. Like, how was there anything that you and your husband decided to do to just even work on your marriage or even just be able to stay connected that way?
Okay, so before I answer that, I'll say this about what you just said. So your son was in the hospital 3 days and you prefaced it with saying that's nothing like what we went through. But but the thing that I always want to tell people is it's all about your own experience. Like that 3 days to you felt like what our weeks in the NICU and all those surgeries felt like to us, because that is what you saw your child go through. So it is just as valid and just as intense a feeling. You know what I mean? Like I always want to tell parents of kids who are, you know, neurotypical that are friends of ours or that are Charlie's classmates. I'm like, please don't feel that like we are these warrior parents. This is just what we went through. Charlie was our first. We had nothing to compare it to. Like this was our normal and this is our normal. So what it feels like for us probably is the same as it feels like for you. It just looks different on the outside. But
it's a fascinating point. Thank you for that validation.
Yes, absolutely. Like it's everybody's parenting experience. You feel that so deeply and you take that with you through every day. And it's, you know, it's hard and it's scary and something and things are amazing too. And you feel all of that. But so Jody and I, you know, it's actually really funny. In those early years, I think it was when you're living in that crisis mode, it's almost easier to cling to each other. Like, we didn't really have to work on our relationship because we were each other's lifelines. Mm. And we had to pray over Charlie so much. Like, you know, they, you know, you feel closer to God when life is hard.
Right. Mm.
And you're more willing to be vulnerable when all of life feels vulnerable because you don't have any armor to put on. You don't have any mm-hmm. shield to put up, you know? And I would say now is actually harder to find those moments of connection and have actual conversations that aren't about the children. And remember, I mean, we're going on, oh, see, this is bad. I just forgot. We're going on 13 years.
Yeah. Oh, 12, congratulations.
I literally that's awesome. Can't remember. Yeah. 12 or 13. Yeah. 13 years of marriage. And, and it's like, now is when we have to be more intentional about our time together. Like, we just had that conversation yesterday morning. Jody had gotten like an invitation on LinkedIn to like someone was interested in recruiting him for a job. And, you know, he likes his job, but because of what he does, there's all these opportunities out there. And so we started talking about it and I started to get stressed out because it was like the potential to work from home. And I'm like, oh my gosh, would we just kill each other if we both were home? Yeah. Like, and you know what I mean? And
he's like, boundaries.
He's like, I just wanted to talk it out loud. It doesn't mean I'm taking it. I'm like, I know. And you know, it was this whole big conversation. And
yes,
it's same, yep. You know, it's just you have to stop and have more conversations so everyone doesn't feel so so big and heavy.
Right. That's true.
But yeah. There's no advice in there other than just we are trying to be more intentional about having time for us, even though it is hard to find a babysitter who can take care of all three of our children with all their different, you know, needs and desires and everything else. But it's necessary. It's just as necessary as anything else is. Mm-hmm.
The wait is over. Find out what happens in the thrilling conclusion of the 12th Dead Sea Squirrels book, Babylon Breakout. Hi, I'm Mike Naraki, co-creator of VeggieTales, voice of Larry the Cucumber, and author of The Dead Sea Squirrels. Get ready for more daring rescues and hilarious jokes as Merle and Pearl and their animal friends embark on a ridiculous mission to bust the kidnapped Gomez family out of Babylon, a Bible-themed amusement park with talking animals. Young readers will love the nutty misadventures of 10-year-old Michael and his friends and will learn all about biblical life lessons such as forgiveness and friendship. Read all 12 Dead Sea Squirrels books. Available wherever books are sold.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, Jamie, speaking of three children, because we went from Charlie to all of a sudden three.
Oh, yeah. So
tell us about that. So I read in your book that you have twins. And what's the age difference between Charlie and the twins then?
So they are a little more than 2 years apart. Charlie turned two in March, and then they were born at the beginning of June. They are five, and Charlie is seven and about to turn eight. Yeah, you know, you were like, so we just went from Charlie to now you're a mother of three. That's literally how I felt. Like,
okay.
So they were born early too. They were born at 30 weeks, same as Charlie.
Okay.
I also, fun fact, was born at 30 weeks. So apparently this is something my mother should have like prepped me for. But
come on, Mom.
Yeah. I mean, you're all excited to come into the world.
Yeah.
Right. Right. It was a totally different game from the beginning with them because it was not as scary a delivery. My water had broken and I had already been in the hospital kind of on steroids and on whatever they needed for a little over 24 or 48 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, before I went into labor. So unlike with Charlie, where I showed up at the hospital and had him 45 minutes later.
Oh, wow.
Did not even know that I was in labor with Charlie. Yes. Thought it was just back spasms. So that was great. But so for the twins, I had a little more time and it didn't feel as scary. And then when they were born, they just needed to get bigger. Like they just needed to grow.
Okay. Yeah,
so even though they were in the NICU, they were there less time and then they came home. And so we were less worried about their safety, which like I said before, that was the huge deal. Like, but going from Charlie to then a mother of three And, you know, they were little and they had to eat eight times a day times two people. And then they got a little bit bigger and I had three children who were not mobile. Like, it became, I really don't remember the first 2 years of their lives very well.
No,
because
survival.
Constant.
Right.
It was somebody needed something constantly, which is parenting anyway, but it was literally like no one could get it for themselves if I didn't do it. So it was a really hard adjustment. It was actually harder than just bringing Charlie home, even though that was scary, because I just felt like I was having to parent in a different way because I had learned how to parent one way, but then these children need different things. And again, I'll say, I think any parent, the longer they get into it with their kids, understand that I have to parent this child differently than this child. But it was just very apparent early on. We're in a really sweet place now because the twins are old enough. You know, they're in kindergarten and Charlie's in first grade.
Right.
And they're old enough that they help him. They, their hearts are growing towards him. And, you know, mommy, can I pick a video for Charlie on the TV?
Oh, I love that.
Charlie dropped his book and I think Charlie wants this snack, you know, or whatever. Sometimes they say that and it's they want the snack. Yeah. But,
kids are smart.
Right. They've been around the block. But they're actually learning how to help. And Charlie loves them so much. I mean, he of all my kids, he is my most loving, big-hearted, joyful child. Like
he has the best smile too. Oh my goodness, seeing his pictures, I was like, you just light up a room, Charlie. You really do.
And everybody who meets him says that. And I think that is just such, I mean, that is straight from God. And I just, like, that's one of those things where I just step back as a parent and I just say, I had nothing to do with this. This is how you were created and I am so glad. And so the twins gravitate towards him just like his friends do. And in that way, because I worried about this when he started school, I don't think that he's going to be ignored.
Okay.
Because he's nonverbal, you know, I really worried about that.
Right.
At least you never know. I mean, middle school, I'll tell you, middle school is like a gamble, but because nobody is their self in middle
exactly
school,
it's a whole different ball game for everybody.
It's like the Twilight Zone for 3 years and then you kind of come out of it
again.
I'm not gonna lie, Jamie, I've considered homeschooling the kids during middle school. I'm like, maybe I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
Well, good for you. I might just take a sabbatical.
Yeah,
for middle
that's
school.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We'll just all move to Hawaii or something.
Yes. Yeah. That's so funny you said that. Jody was just researching like special needs trips to Hawaii because it's apparently a very like special needs friendly place.
Really? Okay.
Good to know. Okay. Yeah. All of a sudden, all the Google like searches. Oh,
yes,
Hawaii.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hawaii. Wheelchair friendly.
That's right.
Well, Jamie, there are so many amazing stories and truths that you wrote in your book. And for the next part of the interview, we'd love to just highlight a few quotes that you wrote and ask you to give some color commentary on it. So here's the first one. Fear of the unknown is a key player in the special needs game and perhaps the most seductive. There's just so much unknown. It hovers like a distant tidal wave in the ocean, and we watch with our toes in the sand, waiting to see if it'll come crashing down. But what would it look like if we buried that fear in so much trust that it rises again as bravery? Because if or when or greatest our greatest fear is realized, we cannot let it sink us.
I told you, podcast family, you got to get this book. It's so good. Yeah. So, Jamie, how do you bury that fear in trust? Like, what does that practically look like? We always talk in our podcast, give us the nitty gritty. I love, like, we all love the theories and all that, but what does that actually look like when you are faced with paralyzing fear? What does it look like to bury that fear in trust?
Okay, so generalities don't ever work here. It's like you can't pick your word of the year and just fall back on that when you're in these moments. Like, that's not going to work. So the thing for me, like the biggest thing is, And again, I can, it's easier because I've, you know, I'm approaching my 40s and I feel like I've lived quite a lot of bumpy paths, you know, to get to this place. But for me, it's looking back and remembering the times where I felt exactly this way and then seeing how it panned out. Because always, inevitably, God stepped in and took care of it. He took care of that fear. Either the fear was not realized and it was all in my head, or it was realized, but we survived. And not only that, we are stronger. Like, I'm a stronger person for it. So when I feel like that, I remember, like, I remember the fear of realizing that I was about to go into labor with Charlie and wondering if he was going to survive it. And it was scary for me too, scary labor. And he not only brought us both through, I mean, I look at Charlie and he's the most amazing person I've ever met. And I remember the sharpness of that fear and that cold, clammy, just panic. And this is how it is on the other side. And I think for me, that's how I get through those moments, is remembering that there will be another side. Like, this is not the feeling of eternity. This is the feeling of this moment.
Right. Yeah. So do you feel like it helped to really just acknowledge the fear then, like naming it, like, yes. Oh, this is fear. My gosh. This is how I'm feeling.
I cannot tell you how many times I've turned to Jody and say, I am freaking out. I am just freaking out. I know that it is irrational. Please don't point out the ways it is irrational, but just let me freak out because I've got to get through this.
Right.
And I'll come out the other side, but you need to know that this is what's happening right now with me. And I think acknowledging it gives it less power.
Completely.
Because it's an emotion just like any other emotion.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Let's move on to the next quote. And this is from page 65. Sometimes advocating as a parent involves silence and distance to encourage independence. And other times it involves stepping in to make change happen for the better. It takes a lot of prayer and stillness to discern what times call for what measure.
Oh, I love that so much because, advocating looks different, right? Sometimes we need to speak louder and sometimes we need to not and choose our words wisely. Can you share with us and our podcast family a time that you remember when you really wanted to step in? Maybe all of you, whether it was fear or, just something rised in you. You know, sometimes you have that like righteous anger. You just want to boil out and say something, but then really felt the Holy Spirit say, Jamie, just stop. Don't do it. Don't say anything.
Yeah. Oh, there's so many times. So because Charlie is limited verbally and people see us out in at the park or in the grocery store or wherever we are, Target, whatever. And especially little kids, because I love it because they're not shy about coming up and like approaching us, which, right. You know, I love that so much. Yeah. Like, I would so much rather it be that than like be polite, I guess, and ignore us. Like, I think that's the instinct that parents, grown-ups have, is this politeness instinct. When nobody wants to feel unseen. And yes, so we love it when kids run up to us and like, hey, let them be rude. I would much rather them like just be up in our face and ask me questions than pretend like we're not even here. So anyway, so a lot of times kids will run up and they'll start to ask Charlie something, but if he's too slow to answer, they immediately turn to me. Why is he in a wheelchair? Why can't he talk? Can he ever stand? Or, and they ask me all these questions. And the hardest thing for me to do is to redirect them to Charlie, because I want to make the situation easier for him and answer their questions. And, you know, his receptive language, what he understands, is above average. So he understands everything.
Yeah. I see. Yeah. Okay.
And so I want to make it, my instinct is to make it easier for him and answer. But if I step away a little bit and I think, well, what's better for Harley, it would be to slow the whole interaction down and let him tell them. Let him use his voice however he wants to, whether it's through gestures or his iPad or his, you know, his speaking device. Or we do a Q&A thing where I hold up both my hands and I say, you know, Charlie, do you want this book or this book? And he'll touch which hand he wants. Or like,
oh yeah, I love that.
So we, it's like this, it's fun. It kind of looks like a fast, like game of hot hands where you slide. Anyway.
Awesome.
But so we can get to answers that way too. And so the thing that I always have to remind myself is that we have to slow down time for Charlie. And honestly, if I'm, you know, you were to ask anyone in the world, I think we need to slow down time for all of us.
Exactly.
Like, I think we're all moving too fast.
Right.
We're all already thinking about the next thing we want to say while someone is still answering the previous thing. We're not always listening to each other. And I think the thing that Charlie has taught me and that I work on, because it's not like I've learned this lesson and I can check that box off, but I'm working on it, is that I need to slow down and I need to also model how to slow down for the people that interact with him and for him, so that when we have these situations, he uses his voice in his own time. And when we walk away, it was an interaction between Charlie and these children, not me and these children or anybody, Charlie and this lady at church or, you know, whoever it is. The important thing is that it involves Charlie.
What a gift to be able to even practically see just the importance of slowing down, right? And of listening. I think that's really, I loved how you made that point, because I think it's so true, especially in the world today with everything going on of, you know, it's not who gets to talk first, right? It's the importance of really, you know, listening, listening more than speaking sometimes.
Yeah. So, Jamie, we're going to move to our last quote. And when it, this is from page 238. And listeners, I mean, podcast family, the Amazon preview is not going to be enough. you need to get the book.
Yes, exactly.
You need to get the book. And here's why. Just listen to this last quote. Go now and live in laughter and exuberance for the future that is yours in Christ. Hug your kids and help them see this promise too. This is your calling as a parent. To show your children that their future is lit with a brilliant heavenly light.
Oh, I'm like even tearing up. Just I can hear your voice
incredible.
Shaking.
Yeah. Full on. So, Jamie, in what ways do you feel like you've been able to show Charlie that his future is lit with a brilliant heavenly light?
Oh, see, I have two different answers to this, because in a lot of ways, Charlie shows me this and then I just kind of reflect it back at him, because I told you before that he is a very happy child, and he has made me an appreciator of the lighter moments in life. He has made me someone who gathers those up like flowers and like holds them close, because it was so hard for so long, and there are going to be hard things ahead too. That's just life. But he's taught me to stop and pay attention to when it's really good and just lean into that and remember that this is just a teensy glimpse of what it's going to be like in heaven. Like this is this moment. Whatever it is, whether it's literally, he thinks it's funny when I hurt myself. So like I dropped his wheelchair once on my toe and I was just dying. Like it was just like,
oh my goodness.
I was writhing in pain. It's
like,
imagine hitting your funny bone, but like it lasts forever.
Oh,
so I was like making all these noises and he laughed so hard. I mean, he had like snot and tears.
Oh, and that's incredible.
It was so funny. Like by the end of it, I was dying laughing, because it hurt so much, and then he thought it was so entertaining that I could not end it without laughing with him, because it was so funny to watch him laugh. And so it's just such a good mirror of like how God is going to turn all of our pain into laughter and hope when we get to heaven. And I think that is how we show our kids, is in those moments of goodness, we stop and we have that conversation, you know, of this, it's going to be this, guys, but times a million. Can you imagine that feeling where you're not working towards anything anymore? You are living in perfect contentment and enjoyment of how you were made and your Heavenly Father and this place that we're in. Like, I think it's necessary that we stop and let ourselves feel that and see it when God sends it our way.
Yeah. And take that moment to really enter into that as well. Yeah. Yes. And so, Jamie, I loved how during our interview, you've been talking about how you felt before and, you know, the things that you were scared of or whatnot, and the journey that you and Jody have been through, receiving that diagnosis, having Charlie born at 30 weeks and going through, you know, all the medical processes and things. And then giving us the picture now and saying that you couldn't even have pictured, I guess, or hypothesized or whatnot, what life would be like now versus before. So for our last question is for those of us of our podcast family that are just beginning their special needs, their journey as special needs parents, perhaps they, you know, recently got a diagnosis that they weren't expecting. What words of encouragement would you want them to hear and to remember and to take to heart?
Oh gosh, there's so many. The first thing I would say is know that you don't have to be alone as you walk this path. I think it took me a lot of years to figure out that I didn't have to fight this by myself, like, or all on my own. Like, I could, it didn't just have to be our insular family. Like, I needed people. Like, I needed friends, and I needed support outside of this little circle. And don't be afraid to ask for it when you need it. And don't be afraid to keep asking. It's like, I think parents of special needs kids, it's like we need so much that there's this fear that we're going to push people too far with our needs. And the thing that I have been continually surprised by is that it hasn't happened yet. I mean, you know, it has not happened. What it does is it gives people an opportunity to step in and lean in and live communally with you and your family. And I would say, don't be afraid to ask for what you need and keep asking, and don't feel bad about it, because that's how we're supposed to live. We're not supposed to live our own little individual lives in our bubbles and give off the vibe of self-sufficiency. It's just not healthy. And it might feel like success, but it's not. That's not how we were created. And so I would say, ask for help. And also, going back to what I said before, know that whatever moment you're in is not forever, because there's so many hard moments and there's so many good moments. And those hard moments are not going to last forever. There is an end. There is a pause. There is a change in the tides. And if you can remember that while you're feeling what you're feeling, it's just a teensy bit of grounding to keep you going.
Wow. What grit. What tenacity.
Right.
What resilience. Not only having a son with cerebral palsy and all that she talked about, but then having twins as well, and writing multiple books too. And
I know. Who has the time? Goodness.
There's just so much wisdom coming out of Jamie. So we really do hope that you pick up a copy of her newest book, Eat, Sleep, Save the World, to experience an extra dose of encouragement, even more so than what you might have experienced on this podcast.
So to find out more about Jamie, you can go to her website. That's jamie-sumner, sumner.com. Or you can check out our show notes, which is inbetween.org/episode92.
All right. Well, next week, we will be back with an episode on...
We're breaking up with our phones.
Breaking up with our phones. All right. You're not going to want to miss that. We'll catch you next time.